didn't say emotionally draining. I said emotionally engaging.
What is an emotionally engaging practice? Like, what does that entail?
Well, I think, the practice did focus on being emotionally engaged in scenes.
Oh, okay.
A coach. No, but also, like, sometimes, like, when you really like the people that you're coaching, uh-huh. you're, like, emotionally engaged on an extra level, you know?
Right. I get emotionally engaged in a different way.
Yeah, totally.
That's so interesting. But it is a little emotionally draining, I guess, to coach a team that you like care about.
For
3 hours.
Yeah.
3 hours is a long time.
And just
that
being there.
Is a long form conversation. Hi, this is the Upright Citizens Brigade long-form conversation podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the relaunch. You remember this podcast hosted by the great Will Hines and the great John Frusciante, now being taken over by the next generation. Myself, Sean Diston, and my co-host,
Nicole Dress-Bell.
Hello, Nicole. How are you?
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
Well, this is a historic day because, you know, people have been clamoring for insider improv, New York City improv talk for a long time. And I've been hearing it left and right. How about yourself?
I have too.
And we decided to step up to the plate, take on the heavy burden of coming into the training center every week and recording a long form conversation. Now, I don't know what that means to you, Nicole, but it means a lot to me. I love this podcast. Huge fan.
I love this podcast too, Sean.
Today we are basically just going to drop a little mini episode just to make you guys aware that the podcast is coming back. Next week there'll be a new episode with a brand new guest. You're going to be super excited. I guess we'll announce the guest at the end of this podcast. My favorite thing to do is to talk about things we're going to do later. But I want to make you guys aware more podcasts are coming out, and the way we're going to get things started is we're going to kind of let you guys get to know your hosts a little bit. And me and Nicole have prepared 3 questions. Now, this was Nicole's idea, and I am pretty much terrified.
Really?
I think it was a little interesting. I don't know. The way your face lit up when you were like, oh, we'll ask each other questions, I kind of became a little scared. You've also been saying that these are questions that are going to cut to my core. So
did I say cut to your core?
No, you didn't use that language, but that's what I think.
Okay, good.
What was it, when you thought about doing this, were you excited?
Yeah, I was excited. I was excited for 2 reasons.
Okay.
One, because I love talking about myself.
Okay, great.
I never did the podcast as a guest. So in my mind, now that I'm hosting, every episode will be mine.
Right.
I'll just spread it out.
Spread it out. So like 1% per episode.
That's much smaller than I'm thinking. 50, right?
Okay.
Like 25 you, 25
It depends on the amount of episodes we do.
50 me? Okay, great. And then the other thing is I love, and we haven't, maybe that's spoilers. We're recording this. This is our 3rd episode that we're recording, so
right.
It's like we've out of order.
Right. A little peek behind the curtain.
Right.
Some episodes have been recorded already.
Right. And I loved that I got time to think about like real things I wanted to ask you.
Right, because we've done the podcast a couple times, so you realize what are the types of questions that come up.
Right.
And questions you want to ask me. Well, I did do the podcast before it was before it ended, I guess a couple years ago. And I feel like I got a lot of the juicy stuff out. So I am interested to know what these questions are. I'm
okay,
very
cool.
Scared. So we're going to get started now. And Nicole, go ahead and ask your first question.
Okay, great. Sean Diston.
I'm so terrified.
It's not terrifying.
Okay,
it's just,
okay. What's
I think
the
they're
question?
Just like, I think these are very engaged questions.
Okay, all right. Okay. Here we go.
Sean Diston, what note gets given a lot in improv or an exercise that gets done a lot that you think is misguided? Or in the original draft of this question, I said bullshit.
Interesting.
I think I have an answer for you in my mind.
What note do I hear a lot that I think is bullshit? Well, I like this question. I think it comes from the conversations we have about improv a lot. I'm very opinionated when it comes to coaching. So I understand the question. Now, I think what's difficult is there are so many. I think.
That you think are bullshit?
In certain ways. And not that they're bullshit. Not that they're bullshit. And I think one of the biggest problems is misinterpretation.
Yes.
I think students say, my note is this, but they don't necessarily understand why they're getting the note.
Right. I think that's most common with the note of, like, play more characters. It almost never actually means play more characters. It always means something else.
Honestly, and I'll tell you one of the biggest ones, and this is purely...
God, I hope it's the one I wrote down.
It's purely misunderstanding, because I think when people give the note, they're giving it for the right reasons, but students misunderstand the note all the time, and it's the fundamental rule of improv, and that is to say yes to everything. What do you think it was going to be?
No, let's explore that, and then I'll tell you what I thought it was.
Okay, well,
we'll get
double
convo.
I think, especially teaching 201 and 301, I see a lot of misguided yes,
mm-hmm.
where... we follow things into crazy town.
Totally.
And I think that might be the one that is the most broadly misunderstood. And I think is maybe the one I hate the most. But at the same time, I understand 100% giving the note of say yes. Because you're talking about saying yes to the intention of the improviser.
Mm-hmm.
And not... But I think when people hear say yes, they always think it's the characters saying yes to each other, which isn't... right.
Right.
And I think it's laid out pretty well in the book, and I think this is something I say all the time. Yes, Nicole?
No, I'm dancing. Doing the thing from the book where it's the puppeteers.
Right,
that's
the
my
puppeteers.
Favorite thing in the book.
I say that all the time, and what Nicole's so referring good. To is an illustration in the book where these two puppets are arguing, but underneath where the puppeteers are, they're shaking hands.
Mm-hmm.
And what that basically means is it's okay for characters to say no to each other or disagree with each other as long as the improvisers have the same intention. And that's, I think, one of the biggest notes that gets misunderstood. And one of the problems with it is we give it so early on so often that I think before people even understand what we're trying to do with game or improv at UCB, they ingrain this yes thing into their brain, and that takes them into sometimes fun places, but it can be a little misguided. I think that would be my answer there. What did you think my answer was?
Well, I just want to respond to that first,
sure.
which is to say that, like, I think part of that happens because... like, yes, and becomes, like, the fundamental principle of improv. And then,
exactly.
like, we say it to each other
it's
and
a
we
catchphrase.
Reference it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's become a catchphrase that's totally removed from its actual context. So, no, I completely get what you're saying. I think that's
right.
a good one. No, I thought it was going to be, because this is something we've thought about on
right.
trains a lot,
right.
don't play plot.
Okay. I agree here, but I think I understand why we don't play plot in The Herald.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there are elements of plot in every single scene. How do you move the scene forward? What's the next thing that happens in this situation? I'm not talking about plot like a movie plot. I'm just talking about things that happen that create narrative or whatever. I love narrative improv. I'm teaching a class right now where we're kind of halfway focusing on narrative improv. And that's something that I love. And I think if people don't like that, I think that's a taste thing.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the note, don't play plot, I understand that note when it comes to The Herald. So that's not one that I really take that much umbrage with.
But we actually talked about this when we fought about it. It was because you were saying that's a fine way to, it's fine to follow plot in second beats. I also think you're right.
Right. I think you can use plot
yes.
to find another place to play the game.
You just have to come back to the
you
game.
You just have to make sure you're playing the game.
Yeah.
But if you play the plot and not use the plot, it can be misguided. But that's
right.
not one that I think that's more of a like higher level one. I think the yes and thing is something everyone is affected by.
Yeah.
All right, great. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
All right. So mine are more personal, not really improv based.
Oh, mine are all improv based, but this is nice. This is like you gave, I want personal questions.
Here's my question,
and you
Nicole.
Want theory questions.
Here's my question.
Oh, God.
Do you miss Herald Night?
Oh, my God.
And if so, why?
Oh, my God. I love this question. This is so funny because it's very similar to my second question for you.
Okay.
I miss Herald Night so much. I... don't go because I went like right after the new teams came out like God like a month ago.
Right.
And I ached. Like I was so sad and so jealous.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I miss it so much. I mean, I think anybody who went to, anybody who was in the audience for Bucky's last Herald Night, I don't know if you were there for it.
Right.
I sobbed
yeah.
from the moment we came out until we got the suggestion. It took me so long to fall in love with Herald Night.
Right.
And I was just really actually feeling in love with it when mm-hmm. we moved. Yeah, I totally miss it. Why do I miss it? Okay, here's why. I miss Herald Night because Chelsea is a beautiful stage.
It's oh, yeah.
one of the best stages for improv in New York.
Mm-hmm. Except for the pillars, but we deal with those.
Yeah, but I think as a performer, you don't feel the pillars as much. It's for the audience. Yeah. Totally. I think it is the best audience in New York. I think even better than the cage match audience, because Harold Knight, I know people sometimes like hate the Harold Knight audience because they're like, they just laugh at the setups and they're just being nerdy and they go and judge. I don't think so. I think it's like nerdy, excited people. I love the standards that you get. Oh, God, what a fucking dweeb.
Yeah.
But I love like...
someone telling you after whether that was good or bad.
Not that as much. I love like the work standards of like we agree that like we're gonna set goals. We're gonna
Warm up. You're gonna do the show. You're gonna debrief.
We're gonna care. We're gonna like agree collectively to be nerdy. Also for practice, like you're never gonna have better practices than you get to have on a house team because like everyone is held to the same. Well. Tries to be held to the same standards of showing
up. I don't
up.
Fully understand. I don't fully agree with that, but I think there's
it
a possibility
be.
Of it.
Yes.
Oh,
I,
yes,
I
totally.
Started to undercut myself as I said it, but right. the hope is that everyone is like that level of invested in the practices and like the stuff that you get to work on is so unique and specific. It's just like, it is beautiful. And I also loved that like year of Bucky right before we moved. So it was just like, I can't go. It like hurts so bad. I miss it so bad. And I knew when we were moving that I was going to keep missing it.
Right.
And I think that's good. I feel lucky that Bucky got, first of all, that Bucky got to stay together.
Right. You're one of the rare situations where your Herald team is now your weekend team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think part of it was like, I feel like I still had more to learn from Herald Knight. I feel like I stunted as an improviser when we moved to the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But the opportunity to stay with people that I love and respect for the foreseeable future is like a gift you cannot pass up. That's so lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, I love this question, Sean.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, can I ask my next one?
Yeah, sure.
My next one is, do you wish you got more time on Harold Knight?
You know,
because you were gone a long time and weren't back too long before you moved to the weekend.
Right. Well, I will say that in relation to the previous, your response to my question, when I go to Harold Knight now, I do kind of feel the same thing of like, oh, you know, I did love this and I love this audience, but I had such a long time where I was going to Harold Knight and I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So like to now miss it because I already did it doesn't feel as bad as when I was going and never got to do it.
Oh, great.
But even then, I did do Harold Knight and then was cut. Wasn't on Harold Knight for a while. Do I wish I got more time on Harold Knight? No.
Great.
Because I think when I got on Harold Knight, when I did, it was too early.
Mm-hmm.
And I was regressing as an improviser on Harold Knight. So if I had never been cut, I maybe don't know if I would have gotten better at improv. Probably. But, you know, I don't know where I would go. I don't know if I'd be in the same place. And I don't think I'd be as good a coach.
I actually mean the second time around. Because take it for granted that you love being on the law firm. Do you wish, though, that maybe that had happened later for you? That you got to enjoy that time on Iggins longer? That's my real question.
Well, it's difficult because that team is still together.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's a tough question just because you know, do I wish I had more time the second time around? No. I think I'd, especially because it went so well.
Yeah.
I'd rather have gone through that short experience and have it go well than stay on for another year and maybe not have as much fun or things regress or I move to another team or whatever. So I don't think so.
That's
I
so
would
healthy.
Say no.
That's a very healthy response.
But I think part of that response comes from having been on it, then cut, then put on Lloyd Knight.
Right.
Like, I've kind of done all of it. I've kind of been on all sides of it. So it's like, now it's a new, interesting perspective to be on the weekend side.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I think I hated it for so long, and I was so surprised. I was on it and hating it for so long. I was so surprised.
I never hated it, but I was probably very toxic, so it was probably negative for me in the
long run.
Okay, let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the most important teacher you've ever had and why?
Oh, great question.
Teacher, coach, whoever influenced your improv directly in a way that's like not someone you were influenced by, but someone that like gave you the right notes.
Right. Okay. Oof. This is hard because my instinct is everyone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is definitely a tough question because everyone has their strengths as a teacher.
Right. And I also, I got so lucky. Like, I had great teachers. And also who I think, I don't think, oh God, this is going to sound so obnoxious. I never felt like I was slipping under anybody's radar. Ooh, right. I hate myself.
Okay.
But I felt like recognized by the teachers that I had. God, I hate myself. I see that
like teachers are probably really nice to you and you probably have emotional connections with these teachers and they probably all affected you in different ways.
But who
gave you that note that was like that now or this push is going to make me better?
Oh God, Gethard.
Gethard.
Yeah, of course, Gethard. That's like, because I almost said Neil because Neil was my 201 teacher and he was like so excited about me in a way that
which is super encouraging, too.
Cut through like my insecurities.
Yeah, and then as soon as someone is excited about you, you're confident and you can start to really learn, right?
But
yeah.
Gethard was the game changer. I would not be doing improv if I hadn't taken Gethard's class when I took it. Not a doubt in my mind.
What was the timing of that? Was that before Harold?
I took the Gethard class while I was on Dybbuk. So while I was on Harold Knight the first time around and miserable and I hated improv and I felt like, fuck, like I've mortgaged? I don't know what I want to use. Mm-hmm. I've like, my whole life is this. It's right. All I've ever done.
Yeah, you could say you're mortgaged.
Yeah. Because I had a shitty day job I wasn't trying to get better at. I had no skills. I had been doing it since I left college. This is my whole life.
You weren't happy
and
on the team.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like Harold Knight, which is supposed to be the pinnacle of what we're trying to do. Do I even like improv? I might not like improv.
Right. And then Gethard, the parentheses class.
Yes. And I want to talk about this because Gethard and Drew and I think JD have tried to take this story from me and tell it differently.
Okay.
Because when all of the Dreadnought classes, which we discussed with Catherine Mudon, were happening, I thought they were kind of
bullshit.
Spoiler
alert, Catherine Mudon will be a guest on this show.
And it's going to be really good.
I
thought they were kind of bullshit because I kept hearing like, Gethard says like Harold Knight is, you know, too stodgy. And I didn't like Harold Knight, but I still was offended by that.
Right.
And like Gethard says like we're leaving class and we're like doing whatever and we're like doing shows in sushi restaurants. And I was like, ugh, like bunch of rock star improvisers. It's
right.
Like bullshit. I think I called Gethard a cult leader on like more than one occasion behind his back.
He's been called that many times.
Right. And then this class goes up and the parentheses class was like the necessity of the unnecessary and the something of the arbitrary.
Something like that.
Yeah. Damn it. I wish I got the title right, though. Mm-hmm. But like basically it was like we're going to figure out what improv needs to be and what it doesn't need to be. And we're just going to boil it down to what it has to be.
Right.
And I applied and I said this to Drew. And I was like, this is my last ditch effort. I was like, I'm going to suspend my hatred. I'm going to suspend my judgment of Gethard. I'm going to suspend what I hate about improv. And I'm going to try to buy in as much as I can.
I would say when I saw the list of people on that class, I was surprised that you were on it.
Yeah. And it really was. This was like my Hail Mary pass. I was like, I have to buy in and I'm going to see if I can. The version that the boys tell. So the boys taking my story from me is that I took this $400 class to prove Gethard wrong, which I would not do because that's so much money.
Right, but it
wasn't that. It was like I needed to suspend my disbelief and see if I could buy into this thing that everybody else bought into. And it changed my life.
Interesting.
Because for a million reasons, and we've discussed Gethard, I think, every week so far. But Gethard, Gethard was the first person for me when I was like a conscious, self-aware improviser who was like, I see what you're doing. I think it's cool. Don't change it. Just do it louder.
Right.
And every note that I'd gotten felt to me through my insecurity, or maybe because that's the note that it was, felt like, be different. Be like these other people.
Right.
So to take a class that was out of my comfort zone and to have that teacher still say, no, I get your deal. It's a great deal.
It fits
do
in
it.
Here.
It fits in.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah.
I want to cry. Like my, I'm tearing up.
Well,
yeah, that was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that's a great answer. I think that class was like that for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I had just gotten on Harold Knight and decided not to take that class.
Right.
Because I was like, this is going to get me two in my head. And I always like look back and I'm like, God, I should have taken that class. I loved Gethard. I was like halfway in that camp of like the Gethard crew, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't take that class. I decided not to. And I remember I watched all the shows. I loved it.
Yep.
And I could see something special was happening.
It
yeah,
was
Gethard
really
gets mentioned on this show a lot.
Yeah. I almost got a tattoo for it. God, I can't believe it took us 3 podcasts before I cried on air.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. Let's get to it.
Would have thought it was less. Okay, great. So my last question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So you're a super invested coach.
Mm-hmm.
What is your proudest moment as a coach?
Very simple story. I believe I've told it on the old episode, but I'll tell it again. My proudest moment for sure was when I was not on a team. I was coaching Graceland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's pretty wide.
No. Moment.
I'll tell you the moment.
Okay, good.
Coaching Graceland, I think, was the best thing for me. I think it taught me how to be on a team just by watching people be on a team through adversity and through kind of like not necessarily being heralded as the best or, you know, they took a chance and asked me to coach them, you know, and I wasn't on a team and at the time felt a little rejected from the theater, you know, from improv in general. Wasn't feeling that great, but I started coaching them and got super invested, partly because it was all I really had to get invested with improv-wise. And I definitely would go to Herald Night and was partly like the reason I was like I needed to keep going to Herald Night. And the reason I was able to keep going was because I was coaching this team.
Because sometimes it can be hard to go when you're cut.
When you're cut, you don't want to see any improv. You don't want to see anyone enjoying the magic of the Herald Night audience without you.
You also don't want anybody to ask you why you're there.
Yeah. I mean, and that's probably part of the reason you miss it is you see people experiencing that magic and you're like, fuck, I wish I could.
Yeah.
You know, I have my own magic now, but this is a specific thing. And it's so interesting because I think about this podcast even and I'm like, God, this is so insidery. But I'm like, yeah. It's very insidery, but there's a lot of power to sort of this tiny facet. But let me get back to this story. So the Graceland story is back then Lloyd Teams would do a show, I'd say maybe once every few months. And this was right before shakeups and they were about to do a show. And Graceland had been on a little bit of a run at Lloyd Night. I'd been coaching them. They had been working on this new opening, and they were getting really, really good at it.
The flocking opening.
Yeah. I don't remember if that was on Herald Night or not. But if it wasn't, they were crushing the pattern game on Lloyd Night. They were really, really good at the pattern game. And there were all sorts of mini moments where I felt like I was pushing each of them individually. Like Annie Berry got better. Marshall got better. Like everyone on the team was getting better. The team was getting better. And I was like, this feels really good. There's some momentum. But you know, momentum and then auditions happen and those things always happen. And you're like, well, what the fuck do we expect? You know, what's going to happen? So I knew going into this show, I think it was, yeah, with Nate. Nate was going to be at this Herald Night show that all the Lloyd teams performed at, and the teams that did well would be rewarded.
Yep.
Because at the time, there weren't many teachers giving notes, and there wasn't that many eyes on Lloyd Night.
I think especially for some reason, because I was coaching City Mouse, rest in peace, that year.
Yeah.
If for some reason, Lloyd Night on Herald Night felt like the deal.
I think there were,
for some reason, like that year especially, it felt like that was it.
It was interesting. Graceland, we went into a rehearsal before, and I love sports and had been watching Friday Night Lights and lots of sports movies, and I thought, how would I get this team ready for this show? So I think I went in and I prepared like a speech, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember starting rehearsal in this very frank way of just like, guys, we have the show on Tuesday, there will be people there watching to determine what happens with this team. We can either be scared or we can go in and be confident. It was a much longer, more emotional speech than that probably, but I remember seeing the team sort of light up in a way I haven't seen an improv team light up before. It did feel like I was getting a team ready for a football game or something, and they were truly encouraged by it. And whatever it was about that group of people, they kind of took to this sort of like sports mentality, and they did a show on Herald Night that maybe was one of their best Heralds ever. Mm-hmm. Every single person had an amazing moment. And I watched it in the tech booth with Nate. And I think my proudest moment was just when Nate, the person who had cut me from Herald Night, who I thought, you know, didn't think that highly of me. Obviously, you know, these are all the insecurities of every improviser, which we can find, you know, obviously is not true. He put me back on a team, et cetera. But at the time, Nate leaned over to me and said, this team's pretty damn good, huh? You coach them? And I was like, yep. And that was my proudest moment as a coach.
Cool.
Was success. like seeing a team be successful and knowing that I had something to do with it. It's a selfish kind of moment, but I for sure. And then later that team became a Herald team, and it was the first time that ever happened. And I think it was a credit to that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my proudest moment as a coach.
Awesome.
And my final question to you, Nicole, when it comes to improv, what annoys you the most? So what I mean is, what's the thing that you see all the time, and if you were noting everyone, you would note everyone on?
First beat walk-ons.
First beat walk-ons. A very specific answer. So let's explain. Because
I mean, I feel like I've been talking about this so much lately, and I tweeted about it. Like, I'll die on this hill. I don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting so mad. Mm-hmm. I have so many ranges of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first beat walk-on is endemic. I don't know if that's the word I mean. But it is indicative of a problem that is the problem in improv, which is that you assume that the people on stage, you assume you are smarter than the people on stage. And I know we call it support, and it's like supposed to be about saving people and supposed to be about helping. But I think more often than not, it is motivated by like, oh, this scene, we say like, you shouldn't walk on if you think this scene needs more you. And, like, people think that means, like, oh, you shouldn't walk on just to, like, be on stage. Yes. But also I think sometimes people think, like, oh, the key to saving this scene or fixing this scene or playing this game or justifying this game lay within me. And it's like, no, give them a shot. I think it's so rare, maybe doesn't exist, that there is a game or a scene that cannot be worked out between the two people on stage trying to work it out together.
Can I interject?
Of course.
Because I agree with you.
Yeah.
I don't think it's my biggest thing, but I do think there's an issue there. And not to say that first beat walk-ons, I would never say, like, don't do walk-ons in first beats.
I would.
I understand that. But let me tell you a story about me.
Oh, boy.
When I...
Are you walking on to my rant right
now? A little
now?
Bit.
Okay,
in
great,
the first
great, great.
Beat.
As long as we agree.
When I first got on Herald Night, it was with Standard Oil. And there were a bunch of veterans on that team. And I was this brand new maniac that didn't necessarily... wasn't that good.
Sure.
And I was, and I say this to my students and I say this to everyone, it's like I might have been the worst improviser when it comes to walk-ons. I mean, just the mm-hmm. worst. I've always been pretty much insufferable from the back line. And I can tell you on the upper level, it's I think I can help this scene,
mm-hmm.
but it's truly out of insecurity. It's truly out of knowing, and sometimes, and this is something I notice in class,
mm-hmm.
It's a cheat to get a laugh because people have already done the work for you and you're walking in
great.
To then grab the next, like, laugh. I know, it's
then
terrible.
It's even worse than the thing I was annoyed by.
I know. I'm agreeing with you. I'm telling you that it's not just that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes.
It's also,
no, I'm saying, like, in the best case scenario, it's
right.
the other thing that makes me mad.
What I see,
there's
the most, what
things.
I see the most is I am basically a laugh hog.
Mm-hmm.
And this scene's getting laughs. I better get in on that.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that was me for sure. I would walk into the best scenes. And I remember, I know when I realized that I was doing this, I was on a team with Pam Murphy
mm-hmm.
and Betsy
mm-hmm.
Stover. And I walked onto one of their scenes on Herald Night. And I think I got a look from both of them that was like, hey, what? Come on, man. And I didn't necessarily understand it at the time. And then I remember Pam saying, and I don't remember what the context was. It might not have been about this scene. It might have been mm-hmm. something else. But I think Pam looked at me and was just like, I got it. I can do it.
Yeah.
And I was so embarrassed by that. And I always would remember that. I'd be like, I was a monster. I was walking onto these scenes because, like, oh, this just got a laugh. I know how to get the next one. Where I had to learn that the more supportive move, and I say this a lot when I teach walk-ons, is the more supportive move is to just let them have the scene.
Yep.
Because a lot of the time, when you think you're being supportive, you're not. And it's for a lot of different reasons. I do think insecurity is sometimes one of them.
Also,
selfishness
sometimes,
is sometimes
I think
one.
90% of the time it's because you are being supportive, but you are supporting the scene or the game and not the improviser.
Oh, that was 100% my biggest thing. Yep. As a bad support person,
yep.
I was always like, but it was a good scene. The show was great. But I wasn't supporting the people on stage.
No.
And that's another one of those things that we can go back to Gethard. It's like one of those things that I learned from Gethard was like, fuck the scene. If the scene's going terribly, go in there and be terrible with the rest of them because you're supporting the improvisers, not the scene.
I don't think anybody's ever been deeply damaged by doing a bad improv scene.
Right.
I do think people have been deeply damaged by, I know I've been deeply damaged by the instinct or like the understanding that the people that you are performing with do not trust you and do not think you are capable, or worse, do not think you are worth hearing from.
And sometimes even worse, don't even consider thinking about
that. Oh, God, yeah.
And I think that's where I was coming from. Because it's not that I didn't trust anyone. I was just like...
You didn't care.
In my own brain.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes from the like culture of needing to make it work right now.
Yep.
And freaking out about being on Herald Night. Like, you start to fall into these habits. I agree. I think first beats can happen in Heralds, obviously, if they're coming from the right place. But most of the time, I don't think you need them. And I would understand a moratorium on them.
Yeah. I've started doing them. Because Bucky's not doing Heralds anymore. We're just doing montages. But I've started walking onto things I don't need to walk onto. I don't like it. I hate myself after.
Yeah.
I've never done one and been like... There we go.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stop. I'm officially going to live by my own rule. I'm never walking onto a scene again.
Well, I can't help myself. Okay. Well, I think this was great. We've got some...
I love this.
You cried? You got really angry?
I cried. I got mad.
Wow.
Oh.
What a first mini episode. And you've heard it here first, folks. Catherine Mudon will be on the show. Next week, we've got the wonderful Kevin Hines and many more guests to come. If you're already subscribed to this channel, keep looking for more episodes on a weekly basis. And if not, subscribe, tell your friends, leave some iTunes comments, and there'll be many more long-form conversations to come. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Sean.
All right.